really so much you can't think, according to the research, we can't think logically without having nourishment. So for men, we're not working with a full, fully functioning brain.
Welcome to Behind the Bite, where we delve deep into the real life struggles and triumphs surrounding food, body, and weight. I'm Dr. Christina Castagnini, a psychologist and certified eating disorder specialist, bringing you a unique blend of personal experience as a recovered individual with over 25 years of professional expertise. In each episode, we'll share the courageous journeys of individuals who have faced these challenges firsthand, alongside insights from dedicated professionals in the field. Whether you're seeking healing, inspiration, or simply a deeper understanding, this podcast is here to empower you on your own path to a better life. Join us as we explore stories of resilience, discuss the latest insights, and strive to foster a community of support and growth. Together, we can break down barriers, challenge stigma, and pave the way towards healing and living authentically.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to the show. I love when people are listening, and I say this almost every podcast, but whether it is the first time you are listening or you've listened before, thank you for being here. I do this show for you, and I really appreciate you being here. And today, I want to start out with something that I see all the time, both in my work and just out there in people in general. A lot of people think the issue is that they're not confident enough, or they need more self-esteem, or they just need to feel better about themselves. So they keep trying to work on those things. They try to, quote unquote, fix themselves, improve themselves, push themselves to be better, whatever that means. And even with all the effort that they put in, they still don't feel better or, quote unquote, okay. And that's where this conversation for today's show comes in. Because what I see all the time is that there's really thoughtful people that are self-aware, high-functioning people even, who are doing everything, whatever you want to think right is, if you want to put that in quotes, and they still feel like they're falling short in some way. And it's not because anything's wrong with them. It's because the moment something uncomfortable shows up, self-doubt, shame, fear, they immediately try to fix it or push it away or not even feel it at all. So today we're talking about something different. We're talking about self-acceptance. And I want to be really clear about what I mean by that, because I think this gets misunderstood a lot. This isn't about pretending everything's fine. It's not about loving every single part about yourself. And it's really about being able to be with yourself, even when it's uncomfortable, even when you don't like what's coming up, even when you maybe your first instinct is to avoid it. And I'm so excited for the guest today. She's been on the show before, Ellie Spatz-Lazar, who, like I said, she's been on here before. She's awesome. She's a therapist, author, and speaker with almost 2 decades of experience. And she also brings her own lived recovery from an eating disorder into the work that she does. And what I really appreciate about Ellie is that she doesn't just talk about this from a clinical standpoint. Like I said, she's lived it, and she really challenges a lot of the things we've been taught to chase, especially when it comes to self-esteem and trying to, like I said, in quotes, fix ourselves. So in this conversation, we're going to get into the difference between confidence, self-esteem, and self-acceptance, and why self-esteem can actually be unreliable, and what it looks like to approach yourself differently instead of constantly trying to change or improve yourself. And we also talk about eating disorder recovery, imposter syndrome, and what actually shifts when you stop fighting yourself all the time. So I'm really excited for you guys to listen, and I'm gonna go get Ellie and get into it.
All right, Ellie, welcome to the show.
Hello, Christina. I'm very happy to be here.
I am very happy that you are here. I am excited to have you here again. For anybody who doesn't know, she's been on the podcast before, and it is long overdue to have you return. So welcome back.
Yay. Yeah. And just because I know part of this is visual, I would like to say to listeners, for some of you who cannot see, there is a black eye on my face below my glasses and some beautiful colors on my face from a they're actually really cool colors, oddly. But it happened from a spill that happened this weekend, which very much goes into the topic that Christina and I decided to talk about. Yeah, but I needed to name what was in the room as people are like, has she been beaten? What has happened here?
Which is so interesting, right? Like, I'm looking at you and with your glasses on, I can't really see anything, but also the need to explain things, right? People make all sorts of assumptions when they see certain things on people or the way somebody looks. And so I think that's all part of this too. But I know when we were talking before like hitting record, we came up with all sorts of ideas and things in regard to this topic. So I'd love for you to just jump in. And then I think it's going to be a really fascinating conversation.
The main topic I think that today is about is self-acceptance, which is something we hear all the time about self-esteem, and we hear about confidence and how we have to have them. And yet throughout the years, I've been doing clinical work as a therapist for around 20 years now. And I actually have found one of the missing links to be something called self-acceptance. And that comes with a lot of misunderstandings about it, but I believe that it is the anchor, not anger, but the anchor of what keeps self-esteem and confidence steady. And I'm curious if you have thought about these concepts. If I ask you, Christina, how do you define confidence and how do you define self-esteem? How do you?
That's so interesting. I was just actually at a session yesterday talking about confidence. And I find that so many people are afraid to have confidence because they have been taught messaging, oh, that's conceited, or that's be humble. Don't talk about yourself in a way that exudes confidence because people can see you as stuck up, or they're going to be turned away from you because that's a message like, oh, they're full of themselves. And when you think about confidence, it's not that at all. But I know so many people are so afraid to even admit their good qualities or the things about themselves that they do feel good about. If I ask you, Allie, hey, do you know how to do 10 plus 10?
Yes.
You are confident in that answer.
Right? I am. Yes.
Yes. But there's
even
nothing wrong.
Mild concussion. Yes.
But there's not, that is confidence right there. You are confident that you can do 10 plus 10. And there's nothing about that is conceited or condescending or you're full of yourself. It's just, yeah, of course I can do 10 plus 10.
Confidence is in a nutshell, can I do this?
Yeah.
Yes. And then self-esteem. How do you define this one? This is the one that got me because all my life I've heard, we need high self-esteem, go for high self-esteem. It's the panacea of mental health. I mean, I know that kind of the self-help, there's a lot of great research on self-esteem. And then the self-help industry took over parts of it. But at this point, how do you define, and I reckon that you're a clinical psychologist, but like, how do we define self-esteem?
For me, and you know, for people who may not do work for like core beliefs and things. I do a lot of work on core beliefs with my patients. And I find a lot of people have the core belief of I'm not good enough. And they spend a lot of time seeking external validation, they need things external to them to give them validation, to tell them I'm good enough. And so when I think of a self-esteem, it's the absence of that. It's even if they're still working on the I'm not good enough core belief, it's not needing that, hey, good job, or needing reassurance from people, or needing somebody else to validate them in order to feel like they can move forward, make a decision, or that they're okay. And so I think that's the difference for me. I don't know how you would define it.
In the research that I've done, what's interesting to me is, yes, there's the ideal healthy self-esteem, which I believe is what you're describing, which is actually really parallel with the self-acceptance we're going to talk about. And I'm stoked you do cognitive work because we can actually in vivo, real life experiment with my theory. It may fail, but I am confident enough to try it, even if it might fail.
Isn't it funny? Like, how do you even know it's going to fail? If we don't throw theories out there and have discussions, then nothing's going to shift and change and grow in our field.
But it's interesting because this links back. Basically, from what I've read and all the research I've done, self-esteem is one's opinion or evaluation of oneself. So it can be very subjective. Like one of the examples I think of is when you watch auditions for those singing shows, you've got these people who can't keep a pitch and they're like, I am God's gift to the music industry. And you're like, what? Now that is self-esteem. But then you've got, like, I've worked with so many fantastic, beautiful-hearted clients who have the worst self-esteem, and yet you can see that their worth is so different than how their opinion of themselves are. And that's what got me thinking about this was the work with cognitive distortions, because it really used to bother me to think about, I'd come in and I'd basically be telling someone that they had distorted beliefs. Let's change them. And what I learned throughout the years is how to actually lean into the belief. And so if I was to accept this belief, using your earlier example, if I was to accept that I have a belief that I am not enough, if I don't let shame and embarrassment and all the shoulds that I shouldn't have this belief pull me away from it, part of self-acceptance is not abandoning yourself. So if I stay with it and I actually ask myself, okay, so I accept that I have this belief I'm not enough. Now the next step is, as uncomfortable as that is, how do I make meaning of it? Why is it there? How did I grow it? How has it helped me? The meaning of, like, I love when somebody trusts me enough to share something that vulnerable. Right there, I would see, and let's say, Christina, you said, I believe I'm not enough. It would touch my heart because I would know that there was a part of you that so much wants to give, wants to be enough, wants to make a difference, wants. There's so much power in the belief that I'm not enough, and beautiful power about who you are as a person. Does that make sense?
Totally. Yeah.
So if we can look at it and then be like, okay, this is how it grew. Like, part of my clients taught me how resourceful human beings are, because let's say I'm a kid, this happened over and over, but these random awful things would happen in different areas. And the only thing in common would be the person. So the brilliant little one in them put together, it must be me. I'm causing all these awful things. I'm bad. I'm broken. I'm bad luck. Okay. So if we lean into that, you believe that. How did it get there? Let's stay with it, not judge it. How, you know, what does it say? What's the meaning of that? You don't want to hurt other people? You don't want bad things to happen? Okay. Now, what are the options? If this belief is there, and we know you don't want to hurt other people, and we know you don't want to cause terrible things to yourself or others, what can we do about it? So it's this feeling. Now, in eating disorders for recovery, because I've been recovered for a very long time, you've been recovered, but I can still access that thinking. And I'm actually anxious to test out this way. And I recognize, like, REBT and ACT, there's different theories that do deal with acceptance. This is the way that I got there, just from discovering that how I was practicing was not aligning with my values. I don't want to tell clients that their beliefs are wrong, that we need to fix them. I want to come from a compassion space from within them. And this is how I've been finding for a long time now, for them to see the beauty behind their beliefs.
That makes some sense, having compassion for why that belief is there and how it formed.
Yep. An example of my own, I've had imposter syndrome my entire life. Okay. And I would hide it. I would try to cover it, not tell people. People in my graduate school used to take away my thumb drive because I would continue revising and revising until the minute things were due. So it was actually a joke and they would take away my thumb drive, but they were serious. And I think as I deepened my recovery, it also brought me to that space of truth. The body neutrality is almost like self-acceptance might be more of that neutral space. Mm. And so it brought me into this space where I was like, you know what? I am going to stop letting anyone use imposter syndrome against me, feeling shame about it. I'm not going to let shame or judgment distance me from it anymore. I'm going to really get curious. Why is it there? How has it helped me? And then I'm like, oh my gosh, it helps me because I will triple check, quadruple check. I will make sure that things are as presentable as they can be so that I don't mislead people. And that says that it matters to me how people read things that I put out. It, accuracy matters. I care how, like, there were so many good things that came from it that I decided, screw that. You know how I usually speak. F that. I was just going to hug it and let it be a part of me.
Do you ever think that doing that caused any dysfunction or extra stress?
Which part? The acceptance part or the rejection part?
When you were saying it enabled you to be a bit, put more effort into making sure, whatever.
What I discovered is that there was more of a freedom from it because once I wasn't hiding it, I was able to say, okay, I've now checked this enough. Like, I believe that as I continue exploring this, I believe that we'll find where you get more choice. Like, when you're hiding something, you're a little more in that unmindful space, not mindful. So I could probably sneak check things, God knows how many times, not remember I'd checked it because I wasn't being mindful. And that was crazy making. But then once I really embraced it, and I know that I'm going to triple check, quadruple check, because here's the thing, Christine, I would rather quadruple check something because that's my standard. That's where I feel like I'm safe and I'm giving something safe to the world. And so for me, that actually makes it very easy to accept. And there is not distress about, that's my level. If I do two, it's still probably better than a lot of people's, but no, I can't. You know what? I can't even say that because I would never do just two. But I guess you're right that it could cause distress. But I will tell you, before I accepted that part and hugged it, it caused me way more distress. Trying to push away the shame. Today, I could have canceled. Because of self-esteem, I could be wanting to hide. And then I thought, why? It doesn't affect what we're going to talk about. I love, Christina's awesome. Anytime I can get with you, I'm going to take it.
Likewise.
And so, what?
Likewise, yeah.
And so it made it very easy to just, who cares about the face? And that's what I mean, the body neutrality. I know in recovery, I had to get to, I was never going to be the person who's like rubbing herself going, I love my body, look at me. Getting to neutrality really was helpful. And I think that self-esteem has been something that's been pushed on so many of us for a very long time. But I find that confidence and self-esteem can really wobble as you opened it with the opinions others have, the stigma either carries, the level of awareness, the level of defenses. People can have really inaccurate self-esteem that leads them into a lot of distress because it's not accurately leading them in reality. I recently redefined my idea of self-acceptance as choosing to stay with yourself, especially when shame, judgment, ego, or fear try to pull you away. It's greeting the many parts of yourself with great bravery and compassion. Contrary to popular belief, self-acceptance does not mean stopping growth. It creates conditions for growth. It's knowing oneself plus compassion plus willingness to face reality. That's what I see as self-acceptance. What do you think? You can agree, disagree, whatever. How does this strike you?
As you were talking, I was just thinking too how hard it is in our society because there's constantly this moving target in terms of what we are supposed to be acceptable.
Yeah.
Or good enough or whatever it is. These are these standards that are set in terms of career, appearance, great, whatever, you name it. And so it's
online appearance, our masks.
And so that it's constantly challenged because you may have been grown, raised and have great self-esteem, felt fine about yourself, but then all these outside influences come in and it can really challenge that. If you're constantly bombarded with these images or these messages, and we live in a society, we live amongst people, and being told things and all, you get rejections, you get all sorts of things happening to you. It can really wreak havoc and it can constantly challenge you. Like, am I good enough if I apply for 10 jobs and I get 10 rejections? If I keep going on dates and getting rejected, or if people are talking about, you know, you go to the doctors and you're getting like the messaging, like your BMI is whatever, like you're not in this right category. Or if you're constantly getting these messages, it can really challenge somebody to be like, wait a minute, what's going on here? Even if nothing is wrong with the person, it's just, it could be circumstance. The economy could be down. Like you could have had somebody who believes in the BMI, unfortunately, or you're just whatever's going on. But to be able to sit with that and be like, you know what? I'm still okay.
Yeah.
That's hard.
It is. It is.
That's hard.
Very much. And something that maybe it's my age, is just making it so much easier. It's okay. I accept that this pressure you just named, I accept that right now I just applied for 30 things and only one responded positively. And I was like, okay, so if I accept that, the next step is, where's my growth? Is it me? Is it other things? Is it the timing? Is it the competition? Is it just, instead of letting the hurt pull me away from the actual goal, I guess that's a piece of it, is self-acceptance has helped me stay on track rather than getting pulled away with all the self-questioning and big feels. And I know we're therapists. Feelings are appropriate. Absolutely. Yeah. And sometimes if I could stop, because getting only one yes in 30 sucks. It freaking hurts. But then how do I keep going? I've got to accept that happened and look for where it might change. How long am I willing to go on this?
It's dicey because, as you said, I'm a psychologist. So it's a dicey thing because you have to look at the whole picture, right?
Yeah.
Are there patterns, dysfunctional behaviors, things that possibly the person is contributing to these things happening, and they need to take ownership? And there's a sense of denial too versus no. Like, also being able to say, this is not about me. I can, and to your point, I can feel disappointed. I can feel sad. I can feel hurt. I can feel all sorts of things. But that doesn't mean that because these things are happening, it devalues my worth or who I am as a human, or that I'm doing anything wrong. It's just, let me just keep going. And so there's two different things to it, right? Because you do need to take a step back too and say, is this person actually doing anything that's a dysfunctional pattern?
Yes.
And help, now my job is to help them acknowledge that and see, okay, I don't want to send people out into the world dysfunctional either, but also being able to maintain that sense of self-esteem that's healthy.
Yes.
I think that it's a mixed bag.
It is. And the dysfunction piece, I came to this after many years of solidity, many years of a guide helping me to see what was dysfunctional and what was not. And I think you are spot on. People also, we are able to see what we're able to see in certain times, meaning the defenses are there and they seem to lessen through experience, resilience, safety. Oh my gosh, safety is the biggest, to let defenses open up so you can be more curious about whether something is pathological or not. And I guess that would be a question for you, is about the pathology. So let's in vivo pretend that you've got something going on that's pathological. I wonder if the curiosity about self would make it worse or allow you some exploration without judgment.
Are we talking like I'm working with somebody or about myself?
Either way, you could.
I think it depends. So if I'm just putting myself in a position of working with a patient, right? I think it depends on the relationship I have with the person, how long we've been working together, because in order to have those kinds of sessions, I need to have a little bit more of a working alliance and relationship with them where they can trust me. And it's also how it's said too, right?
Yeah.
I don't think confrontation is necessarily healthy in therapy if it's not done correctly.
I mean, a lot of our language in therapy is very judgmental, irrational thoughts, distorted thoughts. I'm like, hi, that is not going to help someone feel better about themselves. Mm-mm. So go ahead.
Yeah. Good point. Yeah. Like when I bring up distorted thoughts or I hear somebody saying, I'm never going to get a job. I'm always going to be a failure. Like all these distortions, the all or nothing thinking, right? I'll say, I will give them the list of distortions. And I say, you tell me, do you have any of these kinds of thoughts?
Yes.
No wonder you're feeling anxious or like depressed or sad because these are distortions. These aren't reality-based. These are emotion-based thoughts. If you feel it, it must be true. Of course you're going to feel like you're never going to get a job. You applied to 30.
Yeah.
And you still don't have a job. Of course you're going to feel that way. That totally makes sense. But where is the actual evidence that you're never going to get a job again?
Oh my gosh. No, I have worked, our EBT was actually my favorite. So I've worked in that way for a long time. And I would almost want to layer on top of that, though, the fact that they have such a want to get a job.
Yeah.
Like that, again, has meaning into it, that it's so valuable that they get one. And so that's why it's feeling so all or nothing and devastating. And just to give themselves more curiosity and compassion about that distorted thought, because it's still there for a reason. It's making sense, even if it's distorted.
Yeah. Totally makes sense.
Yeah. But you're right. Categorizing, like even just to give a label, it's the name it to tame it. You give a list of irrational thoughts and beliefs and working through the evidence is absolutely massive for someone making sense of their narrative and seeing that, oh, this is just my brain doing that thing it does again, because the brain does its patterns. And when someone's ready, I invite them to also look at how it came to think that, because it was probably for a really good, resourceful reason, and you may not need that reason as much anymore. If you've gotten yourself safer in life and you can explore it, there may be some growth.
No, and that's so true. It's like, especially with eating disorders, right? It's like these behaviors, these thoughts, they were functional at one point in time. I believe that's why you've adopted them. That's why you engaged in them, because they helped you avoid something or feel in control of something or avoid some feeling. Something happened where this was actually functional at some point in time. It just, at the point they come to me, it's dysfunctional. It's hurting them. And something needs to shift. But that's hard to let go of, because it's, wait, this is something that feels like I need to keep doing because it feels like I have control, or it works, quote unquote works, or what do I do without it? How do I have a life without it? I don't know a life without this. It's scary.
It's too scary. So I'm going to lean on this, but then, okay, what's under that? Is this to fit? Is this to feel like you have some command because there's so much chaos elsewhere? Like what? Why? Even if it's the eating disorder thought, at one point it was there for a rational, real reason until it became the eating disorder voice. And it's not psychotic, but it kind of, we've both recovered. I know that voice, like when I look back at some of the horrible things my head would say and do, I don't even lie in real life. Like you can, I called a crank call when I was a kid, I think a crank call, whatever it's called. I called them back and apologized. Yes, I did. Random number, called it right back and said, I am so sorry. I just made a call and it was me and I'm sorry. So I'm not great at lying. Where was I going with this? My concussion just, it was something about, oh, the eating disorder made me lie. And that's outside of who I am. So those types of thoughts are so powerful. They're really tricky because they feel so real. And that's where I don't know if the theory would really work. Okay, if I lean into, I believe that I have to say I already ate because I'm so scared that they're going to make me eat again. And then it's going to mess everything up and I'm just going to go out of control and I'm going to lose my mind and blah, 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 blah. My body's going to change in 10 seconds and I'm going to be feeling grotesque and looking blah, blah, blah. If I go through that whole like if then, I'm not sure where the self-acceptance would land, except accepting that, okay, I have this thought is there for a reason, and I need someone to help me find how to deal with this thought, why it came about, and how to be kinder and more realistic about it.
And that's often the hard part is like, you may not.
The origin.
Yeah. You may not.
Is it even important to find that, or is it just important to acknowledge that it's there and it's serving some purpose?
That, I think it depends on the level. Most of our conversation is going to be, it depends. Mm-hmm. The origin sometimes matters when it helps the person to unlock from other patterns that are creating blocks and obstacles to the full life that they want, if there's an origin to even be found. And often there isn't. And when we're talking about eating disorders in particular, really so much, you can't think, according to the research, we can't think logically without having nourishment. So for men, we're not working with a fully functioning brain. So that would not be a space of interventions coming from a full place. I don't think they have the chance for full effectiveness, maybe incremental and on the way. What are your thoughts on that?
Oh my gosh, that is so true. I don't know your experience. I'd love to hear it, but I can tell you time and time again, when I have somebody coming in who's not eating enough, the ability for me to have any impact in therapy is vastly different than when somebody is actually eating enough. And when I say that, there's so much confusion still in our society about what's enough to eat, because I think there's so much misinformation out there. People think that they're eating enough when they're eating far less than they actually need.
Right. And we still have the lovely 90s and some of those lovely diet titles that actually stated fuel units and all sorts. No wonder nobody really understands. Not nobody, but how do you know what's enough for you, for your body, for your life, for your genetics, for your fullness? I can tell you that when people come into the office, and I bet you experience the same thing, sometimes I know when I'm meeting them, and when the eating disorder comes in charge, it's so very predictable. It's just the way that the eating disorder works. The person is behind, hidden by the eating disorder.
Yeah, so many things are coming to mind over the years. Been doing, gosh, a long time. But so many times I have had group or sessions where it's like the person was just alive, and animated, and like present. And it was like, wow, hi, welcome. It's so nice to meet you. Amazing. It's like a whole different person.
And that's something I love about your show, that you've done it this long. You share recovery stories. You give people hope. You let people know that we're not all the same in how we do it, that there is a process of this, and wherever you are in the process is where you are in the process. And I think that is one of the most vital things that we as a field, since we can't seem to agree on what's enough food, what the definition of recovered is, what the best treatment is. Because in reality, humans have similarities, but we are so very different. And so thank you for allowing. So even today, thank you for allowing me to have a voice. I think what I realized is for someone early in recovery, for someone well down the road of self-awareness and health and stuff, I think that self-acceptance may be a really good approach. And for someone new who might be susceptible to believing mean beliefs and not being able to find the blessings from them. And I don't say blessings in a religious way. I just say blessings mm-hmm. because there's no other word that really, fortunes makes me feel like a pirate. And by the way, I am competitive with you about your microphone. For anyone watching, she's holding a microphone like she's a singer today. Okay. So
this is my acceptance. I'm holding it.
Yeah. So I give these thoughts if for anyone who's ready to also think about self-acceptance, I think it's similar to reaching body neutrality. One of the reasons I'm so good about what just happened to me is because I'm so grateful for how my body functions. And the looks are so like, whatever, it can change in a minute. but getting to that neutral space of just genuine appreciation. And I think that's how I see self-acceptance, is greeting scary parts of you, staying with them long enough to value why they're here, that they grew, to see some of the gifts from these darknesses and from the light too, and then be able to just walk with more wholeness of knowing yourself rather than needing to push away. I think of all the years that I tried to hide my imposter syndrome, all the times that I tried not to have that show how many times I revised something. That was such a waste of energy, a waste of fear. And it applies to so many different things. And I've always been a self-acceptance crusader. There was a big dance flash mob that was called Shake It for Self-Acceptance. And it was one of my real introductions into a room of people who had, some were dancers, some had never danced before, but many of them were perfectionistic. And watching the room shift from being so mad at themselves because they couldn't get the steps to having the joy of jumping up and down every time we made mistakes because it was embraced, because it was a solo, because they were welcomed, because the most important thing was not getting the steps right. The most important thing was being present and finding freedom in your body. And if you could find neutrality or joy, fantastic. But we were all vulnerable together and we were all one big powerful unit. And watching the self-acceptance that happened from that was absolutely magical. And people have said it was life-changing. So I know I'm on to something. There just isn't a lot of research for self-acceptance versus self-esteem. And self-esteem is so ever-changing. It's like a moving target. And I think that's hard to encourage people to pursue unless, like you did, you have a real definition of it that allows grace, it allows change, and it promotes steadiness. What we see as self-esteem and hear and see in articles often isn't. It's very much, how do you feel about yourself? That's your self-esteem. Well, if you feel like shit, that's not always going to be truthful, because a lot of time, most of the time I've met, it's not truthful. That is not a truthful self-esteem. So maybe there's a more neutral way to meet yourself, shake hands, and be realistic, but kinder.
I like that. I like that. Realistic, but kinder. And maybe have less fear of being, to your point, like you hid so much. Maybe just having less fear of hiding, like what's actually going on.
Oh, yeah. And less like when I would watch the dancers, the movers, the people who were in this, when I would watch them get so tied up and mad at themselves, I just was like, gosh, how do we stop doing this to ourselves?
Gosh, just as you were saying that, I was just thinking, like, wouldn't it be great if we could do that for people who criticize themselves for pictures or don't even take pictures of themselves because they're so like critical or like fearful of what they look like in pictures? Because that's, I think, a component of this too. It's like there's just so much self-judgment or like lacking of the self-esteem. Oh, I can't be in a picture. Oh, no. I'm going to look horrible. I don't want to look at it.
For many of the people I've worked with, we had to just make them memory markers because they were never not, well, they believed they were never not going to pick themselves apart. But we got to points where we could agree that they didn't want to lose a memory. So they'd include themselves.
That's beautiful. Yeah. We could have a whole podcast on that one.
Truly.
Christina, thank you so much for your time. I know it was tough getting the microphone today and stuff, but just thank you for your time and having me on. I just appreciate you.
Thank you. I know you had your own hurdles getting here. So we both have our things, but that's life. Before we end, you do have some publications and things. And if people do want to work with you or read some of your books, how can they do that?
Thank you. My website is liveyourfullstory.com. And in August of this year, I was lead author of My Child Has an Eating Disorder, an essential guide for parents of kids, teens, and adults. And hopefully that helps a lot of parents because they just have not had a centralized place to get their questions answered. And I've run a parent support group for over a dozen years. And I'm like, why are the same questions over and over? Mm-hmm. So hopefully that helps support parents. And then as you remember, there I have a book called Meaningful, 23 Life-Changing Stories of Conquering Dieting, Weight, and Body Image Issues. I still haven't figured out how to reach the public with how do you conquer dieting, weight, and body image issues, self-acceptance, and giving up dieting. But because nobody wants to buy that.
Let's figure it out, Allie.
Thank you. But just appreciate it. And then you'll find all the contact information on my site. But hopefully there's something there for any listener who got to this end point. Hopefully there's something there to support and help you. Thanks for your time.
Thank you so much again. I always love talking to you, and thank you for being on the podcast again.
Thank you. Bye.
Thank you so much for listening today. Behind the Bite podcast is created by me, Dr. Christina Castanini, as part of the Los Angeles Tribune Podcast Network and produced by the Tweaky Tales. I love hearing from my listeners. So if you like the show, please rate and subscribe to it on whatever platform you're on. And for anyone who wants to understand their relationship with food better, or who might be wondering if they have an eating disorder, I have a free 9-week e-course at my website. Just go to www.behindthebitepodcast.com to get your free e-course today. Please note, this podcast is designed to provide accurate and authoritative information in regard to the subject matter covered. It is given with the understanding that neither host, the publisher, or the guests are rendering legal, clinical, or other professional information. If you want or need a professional, you should find one to work with who can address your individual needs and situation.